Dream TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, July 23rd, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Anyone who's been watching Wing TV all week knows how excited we are about today. Finally, we have David Ray Griffin on, author of The New Pearl Harbor. And I have to be honest, folks, this book is even better than I thought it would be. Reading as much as we do about 9/11, You start to become jaded and all the articles look the same. But when I got this book and read it, I was blown away of just how much information is packed within the two covers.
So, as am I.
So we're very, very appreciative today of having Mr. David Ray Griffin on. Welcome to Wing TV, David.
I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, it's we've been talking about you all week long. We couldn't wait for today. So why don't you, to start things off, introduce yourself to the viewers and also let them know how you became interested in 9/11 and what followed, the aftermath of it.
Well, I'm just recently retired as professor of philosophy of religion and theology at the Claremont School of Theology in Claremont, California. I've worked extensively not only on the philosophy of religion, but the philosophy of science. So even though it might seem like this is a strange departure for me to write such a book, it's not quite as different as one might expect from the kind of thing I normally do, because what you do, whether you're looking at the problem of evil in the philosophy of religion, or the mind-body problem, say, in the philosophy of mind, or evolutionary theory, there's an enormous amount of data to look at, and you look at it in the light of the official orthodox account or accounts, and then ask, when taking all that data all together, does it support the orthodox theory,
right,
or does it tend to lend support to some other theory that is perhaps heretical?
Well, let me, the first question, and we always keep coming back to the media. So I've read some great reviews. One was in the London Daily Mail, another in the Santa Barbara Independent. So my question is, how far have you been able to penetrate the mainstream media and also academia with your book?
Well, you have seen the only two reviews. And, of course, the Santa Barbara Independent, by its very name, is not what you would call part of the mainstream media. The press in this country has systematically refused even to mention the existence of the book, let alone give it anything like a full review. The exception was that this newspaper in London, which is an interesting thing, you know, why they did it. But in any case, they gave a full three-page review, complete with dramatic pictures and everything. So it created an enormous interest in the book.
And they gave you a fair shake with it.
And so ever since that review, we've consistently been say in the top 50 on the Amazon in the UK.
Very good.
Mr. Griffin, you say that this isn't so surprising coming from the right side or a midstream mainline journalists, but it is surprising coming from the left. Would you like to talk about that?
It has been disappointing that even the magazines and publishers that you would expect to have maybe not jumped at it, but at least been willing to deal with it, have for the most part not been. They're finally in the Nation, back on a back page, there was a one paragraph statement that had been written by Richard Falk, or it was based on something Richard had written, and of course he's the one who wrote the foreword to the book. And apart from that, to my knowledge, there has not been any mention in the left-leaning print media. Now, there has been a lot of attention on the web, so lots of bloggers
right.
have dealt with it. And I should say there was one somewhat mainline review at the very beginning by Rosemary Ruther in the National Catholic Reporter. And that's how the book initially received widespread attention among those in the 9/11 truth movement. And that got the book launched. But since then, there has been nothing comparable.
In May, you appeared on Amy Goodman's radio program or show, Democracy Now! And this has been characterized by some 9/11 researchers as being a hostile debate. What are your thoughts about what happened on that show?
Well, it was mixed. On the one hand, of course, it was a great opportunity to reach a larger audience, and it did have quite a bit of impact. We went up on Amazon's ratings in this country to the highest the book has ever been. We've been consistently in the top 1,000 and quite often in the top 1 or 200. But after that show, we bounced up to, I believe, number 38.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it had a very good effect. On the other hand, originally, they had contacted me about an interview, and my understanding was I would be doing an interview with Amy Goodman, so it would be like the kind she normally does, where she asks questions and I respond and we go back and forth.
Right.
But in this case, although I had gone to great lengths to get to a hotel, I was in Europe at the time and took great lengths to get to a hotel with a suitable telephone, they called me the night before the interview to tell me that it would not be an interview in that sense, but it was going to be a debate.
Mm-hmm.
And so there at the very last minute, I mean, it was, I think it was 9 or 10 o'clock at night, my time, I did not have time to prepare for a debate format. Now, this Chip Berlay that they announced they were going to bring on as the debater.
He's the one that wrote the long review about you that you followed up on then and corrected many of his errors.
That's right. So I had already had an interchange with him, and his review was really incredibly bad, and he was trying to get me on problems of logic, and he actually found no such problems, and in fact, I called him on several of his problems of logic.
Yeah, he was barking up the wrong tree on that one, huh?
some of them, in fact, were so bad that he asked permission to be able to remove those before he published his own review, and I gave him that permission.
Right.
But when he came on the show then, he really came on in an attack mode, and I was rather surprised that he took, he did just what I had said in the book. I pointed out that the kind of argument we have here is a cumulative argument. And so there are many, many lines of evidence that all point to the same conclusion, but these are independent lines of evidence. It's not a deductive argument where each point depends on the previous one.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is on the assumption that a chain is only as strong as the weakest link.
Yeah. Well, if you're,
you just have to point out a weak link.
Yeah.
And I said now some reviewers who are hostile to the message of the book will be tempted to do this. And, of course, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah. Well, if your information...
In that kind of format, it was difficult to get through that.
Yeah. Well, for your information, a lot of people call Amy Goodman's show Disinformation Now, so don't don't be too surprised. But in an introduction to your book, well, before we get to that, why don't you tell everyone how they can find a copy of the new Pearl Harbor?
Well, a lot of local bookstores have it. I guess an increasing number are carrying it. And one can get it directly from Interlink Publishers, Interlink Books, so you can find that on the web. Or the surefire way to do it is call contactamazon.com. Right. Although for those who don't deal with Amazon, I can give a telephone. There's an 800 number for Interlink Books.
Okay, go ahead.
And that's 238-5465.
Okay, and we'll give that again at the end of the show and also in a final credit. So an introduction to your book, David, you say that if people found out the truth beyond the official government mainstream media version, that your exact quote was, consequences would be enormous. So talk about that a little bit. What if people actually did see this on a wide-scale level and see beyond the veil? What do you think would happen in this country and the world?
Well, that would be very difficult to predict. In my book, I don't go into that kind of question because it's part of my own philosophical worldview that things are enormously contingent with countless numbers of causal effects that can decide an outcome. So I wouldn't even want to begin to predict. But, of course, the very first thing that would come to most people's minds is that the president would surely be impeached. He surely would not be reelected. And so it's not a surprise to find that the 9/11 report from the 9/11 Commission's report, which, of course, has just come out.
Right.
And I've only been able to read about 40 pages of so far. But it's not surprising that it is, as it, many critics who refer to this as the 9/11 cover-up commission.
Right.
I didn't endorse that in the book, but I do now. It definitely is a cover-up commission. And it's the worst kind of whitewash that one can imagine.
Exactly.
And the part that I've read thus far is just the account of why there were no planes, jet fighters, to intercept these hijacked airliners. And the story they give is just beyond belief.
It is.
I mean, the amount of incompetence at every level. But first of all, that they endorsed the view that there was this extremely complex reporting procedure where an FAA person had to go to his or her supervisor, and then that had to go up the chain of command in the FAA, and that would take several minutes, and then the FAA contacts the National Military Command Center. Of course, that part's correct.
Yeah.
But then it says, it endorses the view that the Military Command Center would have to get permission from the Secretary of Defense even to have jet fighters ordered to intercept, and that surely is not true. And in any case, so they endorsed that view that it was extremely complex, the protocol. And then you have these people who just acted with extreme incompetence, violating procedures all over the place, and yet the report says, well, but we're not going to cast any blame on any particular individual.
Mr. Griffin.
Yeah.
You say we're forced to choose between a coincidence theory, which would involve an unprecedented system-wide breakdown of all of our defenses in this country, despite the huge amounts of money in our budget used for defense and intelligence, or the complicity theory, which means that highest levels of our government were involved in this. Could you explain to the people what is more plausible, what has more credulity?
Yes, as you know, many people say, oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. And at the beginning of the book, I point out that, of course, that's not true. We believe in conspiracy theories all the time. When any two or more people conspire in secret to do something illegal, that's a conspiracy, and we know that happens from bank robberies to Enron scandals, mm-hmm. and so on. And so the only question is, which conspiracy here do we believe? Because the official account is itself the original conspiracy theory.
Right.
So the question is, do we believe that theory or believe that perhaps government agents were involved. Mm. With regard to the coincidence theory, I point out that if you accept the official account, you have to accept that there were at least 38 coincidences. For example, that just on that day, standard operating procedures were not followed, not only with Flight 11, but also Flight 175 and Flight 77 and Flight 93. Then you have to accept that just on that day, NORAD became extremely inefficient. And on that day, the pilots became extremely incompetent and couldn't fly the airplanes, which can fly 1,850 or so miles an hour. They couldn't get them up above 500 or 600 or 700 miles.
Yeah.
No, it just goes down the line, coincidence after coincidence.
Prior to
9/11, you had all these that every time there was some investigation that might have uncovered the plot, just coincidentally, somebody screwed up or somebody squashed it.
Yeah.
And then after 9/11, just coincidentally, every time they were ready to catch bin Laden, oops, he got away.
Yeah, that's a question we're going to ask in a little bit. One of our favorite areas of investigation is the Pentagon. And as you point out, the original hole in the Pentagon is about 18 feet in diameter, yet this Boeing 757 is 40 feet from tail to ground, and the wingspan is about 127 feet. So, did the wings on that plane have hinges on them? And like, did the tail somehow have a button where it could duck down when it went? You know, explain how it just this square peg in a round hole, it doesn't fit.
This is one of almost countless examples where the mainline press simply hasn't done its job, because everybody still accepts the 9/11. Report accepts without question that it was Flight 77 and therefore Boeing 757 that crashed into the Pentagon. And yet there is a photograph taken by a Marine, surely not part of some left-wing conspiracy, that shows that the facade of the west wing of the Pentagon, which was where it was hit, did not immediately fall down. It didn't fall for another half hour. And this photograph shows that the hole, that whatever the aircraft was, created a hole that was only no more than 18 or 19 feet in diameter. And so, as you say, it is impossible that a Boeing could have gone inside. And yet, just last night on television, I saw a video of the Pentagon right after it was hit. And you can see there is no Boeing 757 sitting out on the yard in front of the Pentagon, because it would have had to have been, because the only part that could have gone inside that small hole would have been the nose.
The nose, right.
So you would have had the wings and the engines and the tail and the fuselage, all that. And yet nobody raises a question. Furthermore, to show the level of reporting we've had, the Washington Post reported that the hole that was created was 200 feet wide and five stories high, and that was the day after 9/11.
Right.
I contacted one of the authors of that article and asked him where he got that information and had he seen any reason to revise it. He said no, he couldn't remember where he got it, but he said, you sound skeptical, but if you want to know how big the hole was, just ask the Pentagon, they'll tell you.
Mr. Griffin.
Yes.
A lot of eyewitnesses have claimed to be proponents of the official version, the 757 version. And these are used to debunk other possibilities, such as a smaller aircraft or a missile hitting the Pentagon. Now, do these eyewitness testimonies, should they be given more weight than other possibilities, or do they actually support the missile theory?
Well, several considerations taken into account. One is that in any forensic case, in any jury trial, say, for example, the physical evidence is almost always given more weight than eyewitness testimony, because we all know that eyewitness testimony can be wrong for one of many reasons. Secondly, there are many reasons to suspect that some of the eyewitness testimony, as reported at least, was wrong. And thirdly, as you intimate, some of the eyewitness testimony does support the theory that it was not a giant airliner, but some smaller aircraft, whether it was a missile, a winged missile, or a small military airplane.
Right.
And given the fact that one of the issues in the psychology and sociology of perception is that we tend to see, in retrospect, what we're supposed to believe, what we're told was the case, it's not surprising that even if there were not a Boeing in the area, some people would have reported it, but one doesn't even have to go that far. As I show, there are three other ways to account for this disparate set of reports. Well, and so there are ways to explain that people actually did see a Boeing in the area and even thought they might have seen it or they might have been reported as saying they saw it hit the Pentagon.
Well,
whereas
the,
actually when you look at it closely, they did not report that.
That's right.
Well, one of the things you mentioned, and it's very vital to understanding the post 9/11, when we go into the war, is that you bring up many times that our military had a chance to capture supposedly Osama bin Laden. One was in the, when he was in a cave in Tora Bora. And you said the special forces were ready to nab him. When all of a sudden these helicopters come in, they load up all the passengers and they leave. Another time was in Kabul when these trucks came in where they had them surrounded, and they just load up all these Al-Qaeda members and ship them off. So what's going on here?
Yes, like in the battle for Tora Bora, there were two, besides what you mentioned, there were two escape routes into Pakistan. The military bombarded one of them, but completely left the other one free. So one report was that at least 600 people, probably Al-Qaeda and Taliban, were able to escape into Pakistan. And the Telegraph in England said, in retrospect, the battle for Tora Bora looks more like a grand charade.
Yeah.
Mr. Griffin, I'm a proponent of the complicity theory. I think there was all kinds of involvement in what happened on 9/11. Yet you raise an interesting point here. You say, given the massive amount of planning that must have been required to pull off the events of 9/11, did they formulate as plausible a cover story, considering the needless lies and the foolish statements they've made since? And you brought some of those up, like there were no advance warnings of the attacks, or a presidential order is required to intercept an airplane. So did they formulate as plausible a cover story as they might have or should have?
Well, you know, it doesn't seem like it. And as we've, you know, one would suspect, as I mentioned in there, that, you know, these are very high-level people who have worked their way up in their various bureaucracies, whether in the military or in political circles or civil service and so on. So you would expect that they would have come up with a pretty airtight, self-consistent story, but they didn't. But now we've seen that some of these same people, you know, if this is true, if there was a conspiracy by military and Bush administration officials, we see that their planning for Iraq wasn't what you would call a genius level either. So it's not so implausible that they came up with a very confused and inconsistent story here. And so what is discouraging to those of us who have looked into the discrepancies is the fact that the official story is so obviously false, and that if the American people were simply apprised of these various facts...
Yeah, we call it like a big block of Swiss cheese. There's so many holes in it.
Yes, that's right. And if people knew, there's no way they would believe the official account, and yet the mainline media has systematically refused to follow up and inform the people about these things.
Yeah.
And now we're getting this extreme disinformation coming from the 9/11 Commission.
Right.
Let me say a word further about that. This should not surprise anyone who has been paying attention to what went on. The president initially tried to appoint Henry Kissinger
exactly
to be the chair of this, and of course he finally resigned rather than reveal the fact that he had enormous conflicts of interest that he's being paid by many of the people that
would be investigated.
Chief suspects here.
Yeah.
And the other person that got appointed that is, well, so that Tom Kaine got appointed, he has no previous experience in any of these matters. He has no previous federal experience. He was a governor of a state with his highest office.
But he does have ties to the oil industry.
and all the people on there have some sort of ties that raise questions about their possible objectivity, but the crucial one, which has gotten not sufficient attention, is the fact that Philip Zelikow has been the executive director, and that means he's the head of the staff. Well, it's the staff that has done all the work.
Right.
It's the staff that decides which stories to look into, whom to interview, all of this. So the commissioners we see on television are, in a sense, just figureheads.
Yeah.
And as they say in the report, they've simply taken what the staff has given them and then come up with their conclusions.
Yeah.
But that means that the staff could select. And here you had Philip Zelikow, who was a member of the Bush 1 administration. He was a member of the transition team into the Bush 2 administration. He co-authored a book with Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, if one is suspicious that maybe the Bush administration was involved and thinks about the 9/11 commission as investigating the Bush administration, you really have the Bush administration investigating itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Griffin, we're running out of time here, but we'd like to thank you. We'd like to let everyone know, go to Amazon.com, the new Pearl Harbor. But before we go, does it dishearten you at all that the mainstream media, that the left media, hasn't picked up on this book, hasn't given it any credit? What are your feelings about that?
It certainly is disappointing. I can't say it's terribly surprising.
Right.
I am somewhat surprised at the left-leaning media. I must exclude left-leaning radio has been the one great exception. I've done, I think this may be almost my 40th interview.
Wow.
So this is about the only way we've been able to get the word out other than word of mouth and word of computer.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a craving, I fear, for respectability among the left-leaning ones, and that this is considered beyond the pale to raise this kind of question.
Right.
And also there's been this view that somehow, and this was what Chip Berlay was promoting, that there's some sort of conflict between conspiratorial analysis and structural analysis. And I deal with that in one of the notes in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply reject that one can be very much in endorsing of structural analysis of the problems of our nation and of our world, but still recognize that sometimes people in power, that these structures of power allow people to engage in massive conspiracy.
All right. Well, we gotta bring this show to a close, but we can't thank you enough for appearing on Wing TV.
A true pleasure to listen to you speak, sir.
Right. And if you haven't read the new Pearl Harbor yet, go out and get it today. This is one of the best, if not the best, out there. It'll open your eyes up. Mr. Griffin, thank you so much for appearing on Wing TV.
Mm-hmm.
Keep up the good work, and we'll look for the second edition here within the next couple weeks.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, and thank you again.